Welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have everybody on board. And, you know, the topic I'm going to talk about today is very different from perhaps what you're used to. We're going to talk about death and dying. Doesn't that sound exciting? Not at all, right? Well, it's not exactly death and dying. I want to talk about good financial management around estate planning. And in particular, you know, how your wills and making sure your wills are current. Now, nobody likes to talk about their demise. Nobody likes to talk about the fact that one day they're going to need a will, probably. But you know, wills are something that are very important, because I have seen some horror scenarios where people have died without a will, and what that actually means for the families and you know, those that are left behind. So to help me out with this particular topic, I have a gentleman, now get this, I have a gentleman who absolutely loves wills. He loves reading documents and he loves doing wills and getting into the nitty-gritty. Doesn't that sound like an amazing gentleman? His name is Derek Skye. How are you, Derek?
I'm very well, thank you, Dimna. You make it sound very glamorous. I deal with death and dying all day long and long, boring documents. And I'm sure that everybody out there is very jealous of my life at this point in time. That's right. So I deal a lot with wills and helping people preparing wills. And that comes complementary with the other area of my practice, which is dealing with trusts and asset protection and that sort of thing as well. So there's a lot of discussion about death and dying and, you know, what happens in those obviously wonderful circumstances.
Okay, so let's have a look at wills in general. Who needs a will?
Well, you should seriously consider preparing a will if there's a possibility that one day you might die. So that narrows it down quite a bit, you know. The truth is that absolutely everybody should have a will in place, and not just people that are older or, you know, in the middle age or older stages.
Or even that have children. I mean, everyone should have a will.
Absolutely, absolutely everyone. I often have people, you know, one of the shocks that I have to deal with at the moment is that I have clients that were born in the 1990s. That's a hard thing to adjust to, but nobody born in the 90s has a will, but they should have wills. Mm. And I often tell a story that my brother-in-law, when he was a little bit younger, he said to me, "I don't really need a will. I don't have much by way of assets." And I encouraged him to go and get his superannuation fund statement, and he showed it to me, and there was a default insurance policy on his superannuation of about $600,000. Hmm. And so even though at that stage in his life he didn't have a lot of assets built up, there were a lot of assets that were going to be dealt with in the event of his death. And apart from the fact that my sister's eyes lit up at the prospect of a $600,000 life insurance policy for her husband, there were lots of things that it showed that you need to consider when you're looking at wills, because wills aren't just wills. They don't just deal with your personal assets. There's a whole lot of things that we need to consider at the time, and it's things like superannuation, trust assets, dealing with your personal assets, but also appointing people into a role of control for things like dealing with your assets, but also looking after your children and other things like that. So there's a lot of important issues that wills cover off on.
When someone dies without a will, they call it a dying intestate, right?
That's right. Not dying interstate, where you die across the border, but dying intestate. That's right.
And be careful how you say that word too. So dying intestate, what actually happens if someone dies without a will? Like, what physically happens?
Well, what physically happens is very similar in terms of a process to what happens if you do have a will. It's just that the results can be different. So we still have somebody that administers that person's deceased estate, which means...
And that would be someone appointed by the courts.
That's right. So they still need to apply for the position of, in this case, it's called an administrator rather than an executor, but it's a very similar role. It's the person that stands in the shoes, in a legal sense, of the person who has died and makes sure that their assets pass on to the right people. In the case of an executor, they're administering a will, which sets out, like the recipe for baking a cake, exactly what happens to the assets of the person who's passed away. But in the case of an intestacy, we're not following that will, that where the person has, after careful consideration, decided what to have happen to their assets. we're dealing with provisions in an act of legislation setting out exactly what is to happen to their assets. And it might be that what the legislation sets out is to happen in an intestacy is very different from what we might intend to have happen.
So, particularly when you've got mixed scenarios like, you know, de factos and ex-de-factos and ex-wives and husbands and
that's right, and children kids, from multiple sources.
children from multiple sources, yes.
That sort of thing. But, yeah, look, I've had a client who came into my office. It was a husband and wife, and the husband said, oh, look, I'm not too worried about wills, to be honest. You know, the wife owns the house. We've only got one daughter and, you know, I'm not really too worried about things. But the daughter, they'd actually brought her with me. She was a sullen 15-year-old who was sitting in the corner and didn't look up from the iPhone the entire time she was in the room. And I had to carefully explain that in the event of the intestacy of this fellow's wife, in the regime that applied to him or to her and her assets, he would have been sharing the family home with his daughter if his wife had died without a will, because the intestacy provisions meant that he owned part of the home and so did the daughter. And it becomes a bit tricky to try and tell your teenage children how to behave under your roof when they can point out, well, actually, Dad, it's our roof. So I've got a few comments about the way you live your life as well, actually. So you don't want to be sharing assets with the kids a bit too early in those scenario. So a will quickly became a high priority for that particular client.
That's exactly right. Okay, but even young kids, you know, as you say, somebody who you know, might be straight out of school and goes and gets a job at Woolies, they could well have a life insurance policy as part of their superannuation.
Absolutely, and so that's the scenario that my brother-in-law faced, and it's not an uncommon scenario. We're building up superannuation straight away. There's life insurance often as a part of superannuation because it's a good environment to hold life insurance. Assets are being built up. But not only that, there can be an argument even over really little things, which seems silly when you say it out loud, but I've seen arguments between parents and girlfriends or boyfriends about how to dispose of the body. And you can tell I'm a lawyer when I describe it like that. But it's about burial
so
or cremation. No, the heartless lawyer and the disposal of the carcass. But the obviously it's a very sensitive issue. But in all seriousness, I've seen disputes where parents want the child to be buried, for example, and a girlfriend or a boyfriend wants the person that's passed away to be cremated. And so it's intensely personal. It goes beyond money. This is really personal feelings and personal beliefs and often has religious implications as well. And this is the sort of thing that can be specified in a will, but without a will, you're not around to ask anymore, to state the obvious. And so people might be arguing over things that they feeling very personally about, and we don't even know who it is that's supposed to make the final decision necessarily. So your will takes that sort of argument out of the picture by having somebody in control, by specifying your intentions when it comes to burial or cremation, for example. So that's another thing that can be taken care of. And another intensely personal issue that's aside from the management of assets is who it is that's going to raise children. You know, even when I have a husband and wife in the office with me talking about this sort of thing, it can be intensely personal when we start arguing about whose siblings or parents actually do the better job at raising children. That can be that can be something that might not be resolved in the 5 or 10 minutes that I want to talk to them about it. That might be one that we talk about in the car on the way home as well, and perhaps some furniture gets thrown around when we get home. But obviously very important as well to have a discussion about and decide on and preferably agree upon who it is that's going to raise your children in the event that you have both passed away. So that can be a very intensely personal thing that is also part of the succession planning process.
What about changes in your life? Like, what negates a will? Divorce, marriage?
Yeah, a really good question.
Children, you know?
Basically, the things that will revoke a will or invalidate a will, in the most broad way, is a marriage. A marriage, the presumption is that it revokes the will.
So anything you've done before you got married, done.
Yeah.
What about de factos?
De facto, well, that one's a difficult one because there is no marriage event to actually revoke the will. So the beginning of a de facto relationship won't revoke a will. Marriage will. The breakdown of a de facto relationship might not impact upon a will because we might not know exactly when that's happened. But a divorce will usually revoke a gift in favour of that person. or revoke an appointment of that person, for example, as an executor and that sort of thing. And sometimes that's not the intention. Sometimes there is an intention to make a gift to a former spouse, although I must admit that that is not very often. Usually there's a reason the relationship has ended, and that's also the reason why we don't want to give them anything after that point in time. But I'm often told by people, yes, I've got a will in place. We did it shortly before we were married, and I have to carefully explain that, in fact, maybe you don't have a valid legal will in place at all.
So how often should you look at it? I mean, what if you do up your will and then you have another child and you forget about it?
Well, obviously people really want to review legal documents as often as they can and read them thoroughly all the time. But obviously not.
Something I read, you know, once a month, absolutely.
Yeah, just to put you to sleep.
Yeah.
in all seriousness, lawyers generally will say it's a good idea to review your will every 3 or 4 years to make sure that circumstances haven't changed. In my opinion, the best things to use as trigger points for considering your will, whether you dig out the actual document or not is another question, but you should consider whether your will is appropriate or not for births, deaths, marriages, and acquisition or sale of assets.
I'd be in your office every 5 seconds.
Well, you might be considering things in relation to the acquisition of an asset and then very quickly deciding that it doesn't change your broad succession plan. You might be acquiring an asset or disposing of an asset that you had intended to deal with in a specific way. And by that I mean you might have bought a house with the intention that this passes to one of your children, bought a separate property with the intention that that passes to another one of the children. Well, that's going to have an impact from a succession planning point of view, and so is selling that asset, because that might change the balance of the gifts under your will. That's probably less common than things like somebody being born changing intention, so we want to make sure that children are mentioned in wills or at least included in the range of gifts, or a marriage or divorce changing intentions, whether it's yours or a child's or a sibling's or something like that. These sorts of events should trigger a consideration of your will. So when I say siblings, marriage or divorce, for example, I often see that people have appointed their sister and brother-in-law or brother and sister-in-law as guardian of children. In-laws become outlaws. That's one of the things that happens. And so, you know, broadly, I don't necessarily recommend appointing an in-law as a guardian because they can separate from your sibling. But if they are appointed as guardians, for example, or people that take control of a trust or something like that, and there is a separation, well, that might have a very serious impact on your intentions for them to take a role of control or guardianship in your life. So those sorts of events can trigger or should trigger you to think about your will as well.
So, you hear a lot about, you know, the advertising on the television for your do-it-yourself will kit, and you duck down to the news agency and you buy this will kit and do it up yourself. How legal are they?
Well, they can be legal. I only like do-it-yourself will kits from the point of view that they very often lead to disputed estates, which is an area where lawyers
make a lot of money.
It's a lot more expensive to get lawyers to fix problems than it is to get lawyers to prevent problems. In all seriousness, do-it-yourself will kits are a very difficult thing to get right, in my opinion. There's a lot of things that people can do themselves and a lot of things that they should rely on professionals for, and everybody's different in that sort of thing. You know, when it comes to renovating a home, I'm relatively confident with my ability to paint a wall, but not so much doing the wiring. So I think that doing your own will is something that, you know, could lead to legal electrocution or something like that in a metaphorical sense. Doing your own will is a difficult thing to get right, not least because a will is only part of succession planning. As I mentioned, there's superannuation to worry about, there's trust assets, there's life insurance, there's all these different assets that might not strictly come under a will at all. But also there's a lot of technicalities to get right. I've had a couple come into my office showing me their do-it-yourself will kit wills that seemed to be legally valid. They were signed correctly, they were filled out in full.
The right coloured pen and
right
all of this sort of
pen,
thing, yeah.
Absolutely, they didn't use the green or the red pen, which was very good. But they managed to leave all of their worldly assets directly to their children rather than to each other. They'd just forgotten that step. They'd assumed which a lot of people do, that they're doing a will together, that they die together, and we only have to worry about what happens if both of them have died. But of course, that's not true. You die one at a time, and so you have to worry about providing for your spouse as well. And in that case, they had not provided for their spouses. They left their gift to their two daughters, and I happen to know their two daughters, and one of them would have been fine. They'd have looked after the other parent. The other child, not so sure about that. that's a person that quite fond of money, and it might have been difficult to prize the assets that would otherwise have been intended for the surviving parent out of their hands and into the benefit of their parent.
Wow. So no do-it-yourself will kits.
I don't
get professional advice.
Absolutely.
There's a problem that I see all the time, and you know, obviously I've got a lot of students around the place. Quite often I see students come to me and they are the left out sibling, if you like, and it really can come about when you've got blended marriages, I think that's what you call them, where you've got, you know, kids from previous marriages, and then, you know, they all live happily ever after together for a period of time while the two parents are alive. But what happens then when one dies and the surviving spouse then may not necessarily get on with the children of the one who's now deceased?
Absolutely. I don't make a record of these sorts of statistics, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if blended families is the majority of clients that I see about wills these days. It's very common.
Yeah, it is.
For people
to divorce rate's up over 50% now.
Well, that's more gloomy news for this podcast, but that's right. Blended families and later marriages, children from previous marriages, it's something that happens all the time. And it interests me that one of the questions that I always ask people when I'm working through their information to prepare wills, I always ask, how's the relationships? Are we getting along with the kids? And it always leads to a pause, and people seem surprised by the question, which of course I understand. But what I'm trying to get to is, you know, are we anticipating a problem? And I have many people, this happens all the time, that people say, oh, it's fine, the relationships are fine. We don't talk to little Johnny, haven't spoken to him for 3 years, but other than that, everything's fine.
But what about the girlfriend?
That sort of thing. And really, it's amazing how often people think they've got, you know, perfectly fine relationships within the family, but there's one child that's estranged or something like that. And so that sort of thing can be difficult. And it's always difficult to know, of course, whether there's going to be a dispute in an estate or not. But taking into account blended families is very important, not least of which because sometimes people intend to make a gift to their own children immediately upon their death, even if their spouse has survived them. But they haven't properly thought about the assets that they own and the effect of those assets. And for example, when you own a property with somebody, you can own it as tenants in common or as joint tenants. And the legal effect of the different ownerships is very important. In a joint tenancy, if one of the joint tenants dies, the surviving joint tenant automatically owns the property.
So regardless of what's in their will?
Their will is not considered. When it's a tenancy in common, we refer to the will to deal with that person's share of the property. So it might be a 50% share or it might be a different percentage, but their share is left in accordance with their will. And so that's a very important issue, because I've had an example of a couple who came to see me. There were six children. They had each had three children by a previous relationship, and their intention was to make a gift immediately to their own children under their wills. They showed me their wills, which they had prepared. I can't recall if it was a do-it-yourself will kit or a will that a lawyer had prepared for them. But in any event, they hadn't considered the assets that they owned in making a gift directly to their own children upon their own death, because they owned a number of properties, but they were all owned as joint tenants. And what that meant was that the surviving spouse automatically owned the entire properties. And because the first spouse to die had made a gift to their own children under their own will, they were then leaving all their assets to their own children. And so what that meant was that we had a competition to see who lived longest.
And it could be a matter of minutes.
Absolutely.
Like if they were in a car accident, say, and one died 5 minutes before the other, then the survivors, you know, the one who lived 5 minutes more, their children would actually inherit everything.
That's right. And in circumstances where we can't tell who died first, the law is that the eldest person died first. And so in car accidents, obviously if we're late on the scene and the the accident has already happened and people have died and we can't tell what's happened, then from a legal point of view, it's the eldest that died first.
Wow.
It really is a matter of, unfortunately, a competition to see who lives longest, and then their children might receive the entire estate. Obviously, it can be subject to a claim, whether it's a family provision application, testator's family maintenance claim, those sorts of legal actions. But as soon as we go to court, you're losing money. It's just a matter of how much.
Yeah.
And so we don't want to rely on those rights to go to court. We want to make sure that things are properly thought of in advance, and that we avoid those court actions as much as possible.
Mm. So the underlying thing is everybody needs a will.
Everybody should have a will, that's
for
sure. Don't do it yourself. Get an appropriately qualified lawyer to help you.
And you're obviously one of those.
I am an eminently qualified lawyer when it comes to that. Thank you for asking. But whether it's me or one of my team
and
or somebody
else.
And how
do they get hold of you?
I work at Pacific Law, which is a firm that can help people in many states in Australia. And basically, if you go to www.pacificlaw.com.au, you can find our contact details.
And ask for Derek.
Ask for Derek.
And you can refer if it's in a different state, etc.
We can look after you in many places, but you can ask for me and we can take care of your...
Because this is really your area of expertise.
I
your area of interest.
I am very interested in dealing with long
weird.
Documents and people dying. So morbid as that may seem, somebody's got to do it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Derek, for coming on and talking to everybody. Now, remember, guys, it's very important that you get your mates involved in this. You know, you wouldn't like someone in your family not to know this information. Please, 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 refer the podcasts on. They are free. They go to absolutely everybody. Subscribe to iTunes. Get your mates involved and get them downloading the podcasts as we do them. So hope that helps, guys. It's a little bit of a different one for today, but something that's equally important. So thanks for that. Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll talk to everybody again very, very soon. Bye for now.